Today we talk the true art of surrendering to chaos as we chat to Todd and Tina on Benny Asking People Questions. Benny Asking People Questions is proudly supported by Major Minor Music Australia, who wish to thank the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation on whose lands we meet here today and do all our work. Always was, always will be. If you'd like to know more, then head along to mmma.com.au. Today's guests are simply chaos. Not to be confused with chaotic. There is a big difference, I believe. They are chaos in the true sense that they do what they want or need to because it's important to them. And if you truly engage in that sense of honesty, there's less need, want, or desperation for it to work. You simply do what your heart tells you. You simply do what you feel is important, and you simply do what you find to be fun. And if it resonates and strikes a chord with others, you know you have found your people. Their do-it-themselves abandonment is truly admirable and I think at the core of what makes the music fun and really what makes their future to continue to look like fun in the making. They are a new act to me, but an act that's been refreshing to engage in this chaos. And they are Chrissy Mondelli and Todd Melanaka of Todd and Tina, and they join me all the way from Minnesota. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me on Benny Asking People Questions.
Thank you for having us today.
Yes, thank you. Nice introduction.
Well, I want to ask you about that chaos, actually, because I guess to me, chaos is a very different thing. It's a bit like saying I was really angry and people go, anger. And I think chaos is a similar word. We get chaotic is different. Chaotic is putting shoes on and trying to get out the door in 5 minutes. Chaos, though, I think is a deep engagement in whatever happens around you, and you find a way to become part of that rather than try to push it away and not allow it to influence what's going on. Do you feel that's kind of pretty true to some of the music that you create?
I think our live show, that's pretty accurate. I mean, usually there's a broken guitar. I get angry. If Chrissy hits the wrong chord, we smash the ukulele. No.
But I think that's really true. And I think that speaks so, it resonates with me as a music educator and someone who works with kids. And sometimes, you know, you have to lean into that chaos and that chaos of music making. And that's what makes it fun. And I think that really goes to how we started in this whole thing anyway.
That's a really good point. I'd never really thought about that from the perspective of children. Is you need to, and we talk about it as children's performers all the time, but you need to be ready to engage in whatever direction they want to go in. And I guess that's the chaos. I don't really know what's going to happen. So rather than fight it, I need to just allow it.
We always like to invite the kids on stage and they'll get their shakers, but then inevitably there's always a kid that wants to touch the guitar or touch the sound bar or see with the ukulele, and luckily she's a teacher, so she's good at like holding them back.
Management, right?
Where I get into the dad voice, I'm like, no, no, and then, like where's the parents? No,
it's so true.
Really, right? You just have to manage it. That's all. Kids are inquisitive and curious, so
redirect. I think is the that's the proper term.
I'm a little bit like you though, Todd. I'm an early childhood teacher, so you know, it's the big loud. No, sit back down, or I stop playing. I'm stop playing if you keep touching it. Like parents are like, what? So look, just straight off the bat, obviously, why Tina? I just guess we have to clear that up. Sure, why is it Tina instead of Chrissy?
My real name is Christina.
Yep.
So when we first thinking about the band name, we're like, well, how can we use them? I'm like, well, Tina out of Christina works. And so there it is.
And with Todd at TNT, and then every album's going to have some pun related to dynamite, kaboom, bombastic.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Because so, I was, you know, marketing 101. Where is Todd and Christina? It
doesn't roll off the tongue as easily.
TNT, you know,
Plus, you know, Todd's already a dated. I think there was 1 year in the 70s that parents named their kids Todd. So that's dated. And then there's probably 2 years in the 70s the parents named their kids Tina. So it just is like, bam, that's your age.
Yeah, and that's back to the explosion thing. It happened, now it's gone. I was going to ask about that. Is that the genesis behind all the names? Because originally, you know, when you first reached out to me, we were going to talk about Kaboom. And then, of course, when I finally went on to sit down and do the research, I went, oh, there's been an entire other album since then with Bombastic. So that is the plan. Everything is every cover and name's going to be a reference to TNT. Really, that's kind of the vibe?
I think when,
for right now.
Yeah, well, when the thesaurus runs out, the albums are done, right? We're like, all right.
Just change your names completely to something else.
Yeah.
So, Todd, starting with you, because obviously this has sort of come from you reaching out to Chrissy, but you talk about hearing Casper Baby Pants for the first time and that being a bit of a light bulb moment for you. What was it? What was it about that that made you go, you know what, I can do this kind of thing?
It actually started because my family, during COVID, we took a road trip out to South Dakota, which, if you don't know where Minnesota is, South Dakota is even more unknown. But we went out there and I kept hearing Presidents of the United States of America, like constantly, like every hour, I'm like, why is Lump on? Why is Peaches on? You know? And then the weird thing is when I got back into the Twin Cities, I was listening to the regular radio and I kept hearing the Presidents of the United States. And then finally you're like, well, whatever happened to that guy?
Yeah.
And then you typed it in and then you're like, oh, Chris Ballew, he's got a whole nother career. And at the time I had been doing jingles for tons of companies here. Little Caesars Pizza was a big one. They're a national company. I don't know if they're in Australia or not, but, and I've done a bunch of other stuff and I worked with Chrissy doing that type of thing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you get older and I think the need to express yourself personally in music diminishes. And sense that you love the craft of it, you love writing songs, but when you're 16, 17, 23, you've got something to say, man, because that's the only way you can say it. And then, you know, I'm 45 now, and at the time I was 42.
Have you got nothing left to say?
Well, you realize nobody cares. I've been married for 17, 18 years. No one cares. But it's also just like, you still love making music, but there's only so much you can say that hasn't been said. And then what you're saying, is it going to resonate with people? Like, you know, it's like, oh, I'm getting older and my life's pretty good. It's just kind of status quo. I'm getting up, going to work. Like, there's not that drive to express yourself as much on personal matters. And then I think you also become a little better at speaking, where if you're angry with somebody, you'll just say it. I've always said, like, by the time you're 28, if you're still going on about things that happened as a child, not to belittle them, but I'm not going to write record after record of like, I'm angry at you because you screwed me out of this. Like, and I come from like a rock, punk rock background and alternative. And, you know, if it's not.
I definitely picked up on that, that comes through in the music.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm an angry guy. Look at me. I'm an angry man. although now I can blame my wife and family, not
something else.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, like, at one stage you were the kid complaining about the parent, now you're the parent making the music for the kid. So it's kind of like, it's almost like an apology. Yeah, now you're complaining about being a parent.
Yeah, I mean, lots of the songs are always just like offhanded jokes, like, you know, like at my kid's expense, which is kind of fun, where you're like, oh, you know, and you also realize I'm not old enough that I don't remember what it was like to be that age. Mm. But now I'm old enough to have the perspective of like, slow down. It's not the end of the world.
To his ear. There's a really lovely quote from you, Chrissy, in the Rock Mummy magazine, where you say, "Throw something out into the world and see what will happen." You say it was appealing to you on a creative level of what could really happen. I think what's really nice about that quote, because it resonates with both of you, is this idea that obviously coming from teaching and then also coming from jingle world, which is where you've found yourself, Todd, predominantly in the last, as you said, 10 odd years with some fairly decent success. They're both areas of music that are quite restrained. Jingles, you've got it's very difficult. I don't think people appreciate how difficult that is. And my goodness, people don't appreciate how difficult it is being a music teacher to children. But the very prescribed kind of ways of being engaged with music, yes, you find creativity in them, but your outcome is someone else is coming up with the outcome. So having something like Todd and Tina, and I guess also so far we're talking an album a year. What is it about Todd and Tina, to both of you, that kind of really satisfies the idea of being able to go, there's kind of no outcome. Now there is, we all understand you still want an audience, but there's a real freedom in children's music that I think a lot of people misunderstand, that you are not adhering to any concept of that song must sound like that song, or this is the genre we're in, or anything like that. What is it for both of you? How does it feel to have that kind of freedom? Yeah, okay, we'll start with you, Chrissy. What does it mean to you?
Well, having not performed really since college and then moving into that education world and helping kids create music, right? And you're the facilitator of that. And I've done it at the high school level and the middle school level, and I've been an elementary music school teacher for the last 16 years. And so, I love making that music and helping kids to make and discover that music. But I think what Todd and Tina does for me creatively is it allows me to help create that own music for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, and it's fun to, like you said, it's great to have an audience who appreciates it, who wants to listen to it. But really, we're just making it because we like to make music together. And this genre allows us to be silly and witty mm-hmm. and creative. And like you said, we don't have to put ourselves necessarily into one lane or another when it comes to, you know, what sound we want. And so I think that's the really fun part. And mm-hmm. for me, what I loved was that while we were in, COVID times, which is when our band really started, it was that great creative outlet that I was desperately missing when I couldn't create music with my students at school. So, and I think, if you were looking at that Rock Mommy blog, like that was a thing I didn't realize I was missing until mm-hmm. it was for us. So for me, I just love having that creative freedom. And I missed performing once we get in front of kids and families. Like it's just fun to perform. So that's what I love about it.
Good answer.
Yeah.
Good answer. Look at that. Didn't even read it off the
card. Well, yeah.
Your answer better be good, Todd.
You got the book right here now.
And I think, again, my educator background, like you have to know your why. Otherwise, why are you doing it? Right. And if you don't have that purpose behind what you're doing, why do it at all?
Mm. Yeah, great answer. So. Todd?
And I think we work well together with that too. Like we both have that same vision and that same, and the throw it out there in the world and see what happens is really Todd's philosophy of it. I mean, and when he said that, when we were recording these silly songs just for fun in Todd's basement and going, oh, well, now we've got 10 songs. Why not put an album together and see what happens? And it's been really exciting to see just how things have progressed, right? We've gone from this little you know, idea to now we play in all over in our, you know, in our area that we live in, and, you know, where our music is being listened to halfway across the world, which is exciting. So, you know, you would have, 5 years ago, if you would have told me this is what we would be doing, I never in a million years would have imagined it. Mm-hmm. But that's what's fun when you just throw it out there in the world and see what happens.
Yeah, and it's fun too now. Like, I'm sure you're finding it, well, for you guys, it's winter down there, right?
But, no,
it's summer. Here, I'm thinking it's summer. But I like seriously came in thinking it was summer. But no, like we've already got, you know, 20 shows booked this summer, which is pretty cool. January or February, I guess it's February.
It's February.
Man alive. I got to follow the script. No, but it's just amazing that they're reaching out to us. And it's fun that there's an audience that wants to hear this stuff. And now, now I got to beat you. All right. It's a competition.
Oh, I don't know. Oh, geez.
No, right. In terms of why, I guess as I mentioned before, I think lots of it's, you've got to have a sympathetic audience and somebody that wants to hear what you have to say. Because it does no good to just, if I have these personal adult songs that there's so many bands out there already, as you know, like you just go through, especially now with Spotify or go on YouTube and there's no need for new music in the world, period. Like you could probably spend the rest of your life. Like even before this, I was like hunting through my CDs, looking for an old Eel CD because I wanted to hear one song. And Christy will say, why don't you just have Spotify? And I don't have Spotify, but I wanted to listen to it in the car. But you want to put out something that resonates with you. And if we really like what we're coming up with, like I still hear Aquaphobic Scuba Diver and I'm like, oh, that song's good. And, you know, I'm like, why isn't it everywhere? And that's good that we're excited about it because obviously it's not everywhere.
but people want to come and listen to music that people are making and are excited about, obviously.
So. Yeah, people want to hear stuff that the musicians are excited about. And I feel like we're growing into this thing in terms of what we write about. I'm like, oh, that's a funny idea. That would be kind of cool. And we can do a joke on that and make it fun and listenable. And by disposition, I always, no matter even back in the band days, even when I wrote like an angry song, there's always a little uppity bit to it. And I guess just the way I write, it's my personality coming through. And it just seems to have found this genre of children's music that works really well. And I really like the wordplay. And I realize some of what we're writing is probably going over kids' heads. But at the same time, it's also fun and it's creative. And I think the parents enjoy that when it goes over their head.
Yeah, and I also think there's an element to I've used this quote before, but there's a quite a famous author in Australia called Pamela Allen, and she writes truly extraordinary, beautiful books for children, and she deals with just silly verse that's just fun and lyrical, but then she also writes books about loss and mourning. Like, she's just really quite extraordinary. But she says that everything she ever writes, she just tries to pop something in there that, I guess, encourages the child to have to find something out. There's always just a little thing that they're going to have to go and research because they don't quite understand the line without understanding that word. And I guess that's the thing about, like you're saying, some of it going over their head, but then, you know, there's something really beautiful about being a parent, being asked by your child what that means. Can you be the smartest person in the car right now and tell me what that means? Like, it's kind of, I don't know. Yeah. I think you're providing something that's really, because it's funny with children's music, you know, I'm a big advocate for the lyrics. I kind of go, you know, children can cope with any kind of musical medium as long as the lyrics are pitched to them. But then there's a difference between pitched to them, but then also pitched to them with them in mind and that, and encourage that constant, okay, what does that mean? How do I learn a little bit more about words and wordplay? I'm a scuba diver who's afraid of the sea. I don't like the water and it don't like me. The only fish I see are in a grocery aisle. I cover them with tartar sauce so they always make me smile. Dolphins, whales, sharks, they don't get me on the land. I once found a crab while digging in the Who is the main lyricist between the two of you?
That is.
I've got to say, be positive in the Transylvania song. Your blood is be positive. I truly.
That was my idea, though. I really love this song because my blood type is B positive. And so when we were planning album three, I'm like, hey, you know, wouldn't it be fun to like write a song about positivity and your play on blood, B positive, right? Ha ha ha. And Todd's like, oh yeah, I could do something with that. And then 2 days later, he showed up. He's like, I've got this song about your blood type. And it was this Transylvania town. I'm like,
yeah, oh. It's really,
but I loved it.
It's a real, I think it's a testament. Cause one thing about that song, like the lyrics are amazing, but what it does is also highlights a lot of the stuff about Todd and Tina, where you kind of lean in on this, I don't know how to put it, like, the aqua, the scuba diver one who doesn't like the sea, you know, you're always finding these ways to take something that everybody kind of knows, but you're finding anti-hero is not the word I'm after, but like you're always finding the anti bit in it that perhaps not everyone's really concentrating on. And I find you do that quite a lot. You're always taking a thing that's probably well discussed and finding, like, you took a song about a vampire who physically is talking about, I'm going to bite you, and I've checked your medical records, but because your blood's B positive, everyone's like, no, that's sweet that he's going to bite that person. Like, do you know what I mean? You find a way. And I think you do that through everything, Todd. I think if you are the main lyricist, that runs deep through all the music that you write. Is that like something that do you think about that constantly when you're doing that?
I think about, I love lyrics. I'm always thinking about that. I'm like obsessed with Bob Dylan and all those. Anything with like really deep lyrics, I'm the guy who goes on Genius and will like, you know, that Genius website, and I'll go through every song that I like and I'll pick out every line, and they'll be like, oh, this is a reference to, you know, whatever obscure reference. And I was a philosophy major back in the day, and I just love the knowledge. And it's like Neil Young always talked about how you could take the main road, but it's more interesting on the back road, just finding stuff in the ditch. And like Transylvania Town, to Chrissy's credit, she does a great job of editing, because like even the first line, it's like, I was hanging out with her last night. I think soda, orange juice. We had a big debate about what he should be drinking. Because it's just...
Well, it wasn't rolling off the tongue.
Yeah, and it's
quite
like, there's always this debate about, well, that's pretty good, but let's try and change this to make it sound a little more... You know, I'll take like the little slightly darker version, and then Chrissy will be like, no, we got to remember who we're talking to, you know?
Not everyone can die in this, all right? Just...
Well, yes, and I think that's why we make a good team, because Todd has these amazing ideas and comes up with these amazing lyrics. But like anything, right, everybody needs a little help. I'm like, oh, well, there's a lot of, you know, process and working through, just like when you're creating anything.
Yeah, and I'm not particularly, it's just kind of like, okay, let's make the song better.
I was hanging out with Dracula last night when he said, a drink sounds about right. I don't want a cola, Kool-Aid, or an orange juice. Then he looked at me and said, only one thing will do. Is there B positive flowing through your veins? With a smile like that, I can't make a mistake. Your blood is rare, you understand, you'd be helping me out. But then and there I realized I had to get out of this Transylvania town. I should have never come around. I said, Dracula.
I think I threw Revenge of the Fifth at her, and she was just like, what?
That's so.
It was this rant about Star Wars, and I'm not even that big a Star Wars fan. And it came about because we had a song called If Darth Vader Had an iPhone on our first record.
I did see that one, yeah.
And then my cousin sent me a note on May 5th, and she's like, Revenge of the Sith, or Revenge of the Fifth, or something like that. And then I like threw that song together, and like 30 minutes later, I'm like, here's your demo. And.
Yeah, go.
And then this goes on to stuff, and I'm talking about Samuel Jackson and 401k plans for stormtroopers, and then she just hears it. She's like, "What? Like,
what is this?"
Usually, it's like I'm allowed like two diversions per record, that I can just kind of like, I have La Rosa where I can just like, I'm like, this one's mine. Like, just let me have this one.
There's the one that gets you through a Saturday afternoon when you got nothing else to do. And then there's the one gets honed in and turned under the album track. Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one that we did the fewest takes on. It was the one that was just laid down. And that one's done, next song.
Yeah.
Because it was just,
I think on Kaboom, I think Jellyfish Chicken was like that. And I was just like, I was eating a Costco chicken and I was telling my wife, I'm like, wouldn't it be awesome? Because there's so much science. If we could like splice the DNA of a chicken with the DNA of a jellyfish, and then I wouldn't have to cut around all these bones, you know? And I started singing
the main lines of the
song. The old Belt of Blues guy, Robert Johnson. I'm like, oh, jellyfish chicken in my home because I don't want them chicken bones. I'm like, that's pretty good. And then it's like I ran downstairs and I cut a demo. And then like, Chrissy, I got this hit. And she's just like, I don't know. And then she's like, she goes out today and she's like, yeah, it's all right. And then eventually like became like our biggest song. And it's like,
well, and I think that speaks to the way that we process things too, because Todd is that lightning in a bottle. Oh, I got it. And I am very much and I want to think about that for a while first. And let mull it over in my brain and think about it. And so when I'm in that thinking stage, especially when Todd's written something and he's like, I've got it, here it is. And I'm like, okay. And I'm thinking, he's like, no, it's a hit. No. It's a hit. It's fine. It's ready.
No point doing anything else. It's finished.
And then what I like is when she's thinking it over, I'll always explain it to her. I'm like, no, it's a scuba diver and he's afraid of the sea. So he doesn't like the water. So he doesn't want to get in the water, but it's a scuba diver.
It's like, I got it.
Yeah, I get it. It's fine. I get it.
Well, I don't know. There's a couple lines in there too. I'm like, no. And she's like, no, I understand.
It's not the joke I don't get. All right. I get the joke. It's funny.
It's so fun to just watch. I mean, if somebody was watching us process through all of this, they'd probably think, oh my goodness, how do they ever get anything done? But we do, you know?
Well, let's talk about the, it's not really a question, but the Revenge of the Fifth, because I was listening to it and every chorus, Chrissy, where you're singing Revenge of the, you are saying Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah.
And then in the very last line, you say Revenge of the Fifth. And I thought, and I way overthought it, and thought it was a potential copyright thing. So you're calling it Revenge of the Fifth, then singing Revenge of the Sith, but you could arguably go, no, it just sounds like Sith. I'm saying Fifth, but then right at the end, it was a very obvious Fifth, and I went, oh, okay, no, I just made all of that up.
Yeah. Oh, but I like that thinking because.
Well, we're fearful of Disney. That lawsuit we're reading, Todd Tina versus Disney.
We're losing that.
Yeah. I guess we're eating ramen noodles for a couple of
I think it'll go a bit like this. Oh, hi, this is Disney. Can you take that track down? Yep. Done.
No problem.
We have to make a big deal about it.
No, we are not.
Well, see?
No, you take it down and then just go straight to the newspaper and go.
Some people don't like
what we had to do today.
We all know May 4th gets all the glory, but sit right back. I'll tell you a story about episode 3 and how it came to be and all the little plot holes that confused me.
Revenge of the Sith.
Let's actually talk about, because obviously working together, you I'm not a huge fan of the term, but there's a yin and yang. You complement each other and you fill the spaces that the other person is conveniently running around and pretending aren't there. How does it look like when you're actually creating? Because I get the sense 3 albums, 30 songs in 3 years, it's quite a quick turnaround. And I also get the sense that out of those potential 30 songs, there's probably another 40 or 50 that are over in the Let's Get To Later folder or something. So how's the actual recording process work? Like, is it really you, Todd, saying, here's all these ideas that just came out last night at 2 a.m. and then Chrissy goes, okay, great, goes away, comes back and goes, I think these X amount, this can work, we can do this. And then are you both playing every instrument? Like what's the actual physical process of creating a song and the collaboration between the two of you?
So far, well, what it's been thus far is usually I'll write the lyrics and have them all how I think they should be. Then we'll start jamming through it at practice, just acoustic vocals.
I do a lot of the melodic creation because Tad's range is about 3 notes.
Yeah.
And so that's where my range can help expand some of those. So especially in those first playthroughs, it's like, okay, what is this chord progression? Let's look at it. All right. And then again, thinking about that melodic.
But she goes, what's the vocal melody? I'm like, E, 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 D, E, F sharp, E. But it worked. So usually we do that because one thing I don't know if you find this too, but for me, tempo is super important. Trying to figure out what tempo to record. Like I've re-recorded songs over and over because I cannot feel the tempo. And then after we play it live, you get a different feeling of like, okay, that's the way it should feel. And so lots of times, actually what I've been doing now is I'll just record our practice of the run-throughs on my phone, and then I'll put that into the computer and kind of build a structure with drums and bass and all that around there. And then we kind of recreate the stuff from there and kind of get a good skeleton. And then from there, we'll start adding stuff. And, you know, like in Aquaphobic, to go back to that one, it's like, oh, we need some drums. It needs to be big at the end. And so usually there's the chords, the structure, and I do lots of the programming and guitar playing and all that. I think the next record's going to have a lot more ukulele on it because we've been playing that live.
Yeah.
But so we collaborate on the songs together. They kind of morph into a skeleton. I take the skeleton. I keep tweaking it. It's the stuff. And as a guy that like loves all that stuff, like, you know, like nobody cares about the background sound and the left channel, but I seem to get obsessed about that. Because again, if you're making it, you want it to sound really good, regardless of the audience. Mm-hmm. And
people aren't as obsessed with it as you, but I can guarantee that they would notice if it wasn't there.
And if it was
they wouldn't notice if it wasn't there.
And then usually when I get a rough skeleton, she'll come over and we'll track vocals. Mm-hmm. And by the time she comes over, the recording's more or less how it's going to be, unless there's other bells and whistles to add to it. And then she'll put some melodic tweaks. Yeah. Always tweaks and always arrangement tweaks. We're like, ah, that could go there. And, you know, luckily with digital audio, you can always change things around. Yep. And then we'll lay things down. And then that's when the fun happens. Like at the farmer's market, she heard 3 different harmonies in the chorus. And, you know, I was just like, at the farmer's market. Like I heard just the one line. And she's like, no, I know what to do. And she's just, like, I'm telling
record
you.
Record again. Let's go again. And then we just keep layering those pieces.
I think that music school pays dividends versus philosophy class. In college in that regard, because it's just like, she's just like, no, I hear like it should be like a third, and you know, and she knows exactly where to go. And then she goes, turn on the keyboard. I'm like, oh my gosh, we got, apparently we got Pavarotti. I better watch out. Turn on the keyboard.
We need to get the 5-part harmony in there. I know, but it's be positive blood. Do you get it? Be positive.
Exactly.
Just do the chorus.
Yeah. That's usually it. She's like worried about this harmony. And I'm like, no, but you get the joke, right? It doesn't matter what you sing because it's funny.
At the farmer's market, you can buy anything. They've got fruits and vegetables and even wedding rings. I once bought mashed potatoes from this friend of mine. Took them home and watched them grow and I planted them outside.
I like singing to corn because they've got a lot of ears. Tina likes potatoes because their eyes look so sincere.
So it balances itself out. And then, you know, by then it turns into this cool, like, layer of just all these vocals. And, you know, I'll sneak my own voice in there too. And we kind of make it work. I mean, we're already working on the next record. And it's just kind of like right now they're all just demos on here that I'm tinkering around with.
I think you can hear that in the whole album. You can see that in the videos that you do as well. Is I think one thing that is really, which really struck me about everything that you do, all the content, is there's a real it's it you two generally are having fun in what you're doing. And I don't mean you're having fun like, hey, look, we're singing the song, you know, and let's all be have fun doing it. It's not even about that. It's almost like It's almost like neither of you can believe that you're there doing it. There's almost this sense that you're just going, oh my God, this is my life. Like, all
and
right,
sometimes
amazing,
it's like that. It's like, know? Did we really just do that?
Oh,
yep, we did. All right, we're going on.
Yeah, like for Aquaphobic, I put on a wetsuit and like we walked into the grocery store.
Yeah.
But I'm like, nobody cares. And Chrissy's like, just go. Okay. And she's just like, go to the section. And she's like, okay, take off your jacket. Do it now. And it was just very like, she gets very worked up about it. And it's weird because usually I'm the one who gets worked up about things. But in that situation, I'm like, nobody cares.
Okay, but here's why. Because we filmed that in my hometown. Like, our towns are about, 10 miles away or so? And so we were at my hometown. And again, I teach in the town that I live in. I'm like, okay, if my families or students are going to be like, what is she doing? So I'm like, run in, run out. And I think that's what's around. So fun too, though, because the kids at school, you know, and they're a captive audience, which is kind of nice. And they love listening to Tantina. And every week they come in and they're like, do you have a new Tantina video? Like, no. It takes a long time to do that.
Look what I filmed Todd do on the weekend. He's running through the supermarket in a wet
suit. Like, when we showed Aquaphobic Scuba Diver to them, they were like, first up, what does aquaphobic mean, right? We had to talk about what that was. Yeah. And then it was, well, where are you, right? Because we were outside in the parks near town. Oh, I recognize that. And then it was, oh my gosh, it's in a wetsuit in Hy-Vee, like in the grocery store. Like, yep.
Sure?
And so, especially with my older kids, you know, I teach K-5, and my 4th and 5th graders are always kind of like questioning and wondering, do you really do that? And how did you feel about that? And I don't know about that, but I think that's, and again, that's one of the things I love about what we're doing. And Todd has two of his kids. I have 2 kids. And I think it's so important that kids see us being silly and enjoying what we do and are unafraid to be who we are and be ridiculous. Mm. And I think those are such important lessons for kids to see and go, oh, okay, well, she was being kind of, you know, unusual there, but she's okay with it. So I think it's probably okay too.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree totally. And I have to say, if I saw my child's music teacher running through a supermarket filming some other random guy in a wetsuit, I'd feel really great. I'd be like, well, I know she's in really good hands because that person's clearly insane enough to really get the most that you can ever get out of music. So, you know, I guess it's all how you look at it, right? But if if I saw my lawyer do it,
yeah,
probably like, I don't know, man. We might need to
evaluate our choices.
There might be a better lawyer out there for you someplace.
I want a jellyfish chicken in my home because I don't want them chicken bones. I want a jellyfish chicken in my home because I don't want them chicken bones. Here is the story. Let me make it nice and clear. I could have nuggets, but I don't always want nuggets, or I could go eat some chicken fries, but chicken fries won't.
Yeah, like every once in a while, like we've got a song called Dermatologist Astronaut, and it came about because I went to the dermatologist, you know, as old people do, and they took something off. And then later in that week, as I was telling my wife, I'm like, I should have been a dermatologist. I'm like, that would have been the coolest job in the world. Like, you get paid to pop things. And then like 2 days later, I saw some special on NASA on TV. I'm like, I should have been an astronaut. Like, that would have been an awesome job. And she's like, why don't you become a dermatologist astronaut? And then I like, again, I went away like 30 minutes later. I'm like, I'm a dermatologist astronaut. Yes, that's a thing. I love popping zits and I love orbiting. Like, you know, you just like write these songs and it's like the most ridiculous thing. And then you're like, oh, that's kind of funny. And then we'll play it live. And like, we've been at the state fair or wherever, and we'll be at these places, or we'll have this audience of like 200 people or 100 people watching us.
The state fair is kind of like the biggest gig of town, isn't it? Is that kind of...
Oh, in Minnesota, the state fair is a very big deal.
Yeah. And we're like playing there, and these people, you know, because some lots of people ignore music, but then some people listen intensely and they're just like, and then they're like,
You can see it. They're thinking.
Yeah, it's usually somebody's like, wait, what? Like, and you know, like, and then there's like a line in Dermatologist Astronaut that goes, one day he'll be famous for popping a zit on Mars, you know, where you're expecting Uranus. Because it's the obvious joke, but you know, we stop and say Mars, and you know, people are just like, what? Like,
oh, brilliant,
you know, and so it's just kind of things. It's just kind of fun because it catches you off guard, and it's just like, oh, that's not the expected rhyme, and okay, that
yeah,
it just makes it fun. And then I giggle to myself, and we got another one called Flossing Is My Hobby, and we turn this thing into this slow blues song. And like, again,
with a kazoo solo,
and we'll go on about, usually there's lots of banter in between songs, and we'll talk about the way it used to be a punk song with too many kids were losing teeth because they were moshing and we had to slow it down. So we did it this way. And then the second verse goes, just the other day, I was at an old folks home where people use
Polygrip instead of toothpaste.
Yeah. And it just goes on and you're just like, wait, what? And it's just, you know. You're like, huh, what are they talking about? And actually, we had somebody at a farmer's market that was like, I thought you were like a Dada-esque experimental band. And then then I started listening and I realized you were a children's music duo. And you're like, yep. Which to me, that's flattering because it's kind of like, not that there's anything against either genre, but it's kind of fun when you're not quite sure. You're like, wait a second.
And it catches people off guard.
Yeah.
I don't think that's the gist of what's going on with music for families and children nowadays. Yeah. Is everything's being challenged. It's kind of going, it's actually not what you think. And a lot of this stuff has been around for years. It's just people haven't really, I guess, engaged with the possibility of it. But I was going to ask, how do the live shows... how do they look? It's just the two of you playing, I guess. You're not rocking up with a full band.
Nope, it's all acoustic.
And what happens at the end? Are you getting children run up to you? Are you getting parents running up? Are you getting parents running up with their children? Like, because again, like going right back to the start, which you've sort of really, you've solidified quite a few times, is that idea that I said in the intro about just really love what you do and be honest about what you're doing, and you throw it out there and you find your people that way rather than trying to push yourself into a certain thing. Who's your people? Who are you finding?
Well, we're definitely found a niche in doing like kids park shows in the summertime during the week. And that's been really fun because you get lots of families that are there, you know, in the morning time, 10:30 show, and you play for an hour and kids are there and they're dancing and moving and having fun. And, you know, after the show, sometimes families come up and, you know, they want to play more with the egg shakers. And we just, you know, it's fun to get to know people too and wonder like, oh, did they like it? And what resonates with them? Because I think then we can take that and go, okay, that was good. They liked this. Or not necessarily that it drives how we create things, but it's good to have that feedback.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to know it lands. And I think you have to be realistic that at the end of the day, you still kind of need an audience. And you can be as honest as you want about what you're creating. But if the entire world is telling you to stop, you're going to get disheartened, right? Appears. It's like meeting another Ween fan, you know, like 99% of the planet ago, I don't understand them. And then you meet the person that does and they're like, shut up, sit down next to me. That's all we're talking about for the next 3 hours is Ween. And, you know, that I feel like that's kind of something with you. I think the people that are going to like you, they're going to be really passionate about what you do, you know? I don't know. That's what I hear.
Yeah. And I think they just, you know, they can appreciate the ridiculousness of some of it. And I think that's what's fun too.
I witnessed a crime just the other day when someone took a bagel and they did not pay. So I called up the town's best private eye, a turkey named Penny wearing a disguise.
An undercover turkey in a bagel suit singing hola, Coca-Cola. An undercover turkey.
And the after shows, yeah, we get everything from, it's definitely Cars where you're like, okay, that tempo feels good live, especially the duo live. You because you want to keep things going and you don't want to bore people and just keep things moving. But like, I know, like after a show last year, like some kid invited me over to his house to check out his reptiles.
And you're like, we were taking pictures with them.
Yeah, and he's like, no, I'm good.
But what I think that says though is that they really thought that they were connecting with us, yeah. Right? And they wanted to continue that connection.
Yeah, and they'll just keep talking to you about whatever, and you know, and it's fun. It's just fun to see. And we always invite them up. We've got the egg shakers, and like during Pirates and Parrots, we'll give away eye patches that are cleverly branded with the Todd and Tina name on it. So, you know, memories are short. You gotta do something. You gotta do something so they remember you, because otherwise the kids will be like, I saw this fun band today. And then who was it?
I don't know. But they were silly.
I had an eye patch from it. It seems quite heavily the two of you just like clips. Everything is just like, hey, let's go do that. That's funny. That's funny. That's funny. That's funny. Let's do that. Oh my God, that's ridiculous. Let's go do that. Is it something you've ever entertained of going, how do we make it a little, like, do we engage someone to do a clip for us? Is it like a combination of the fun of working together, or is it also a budgetary thing? I mean, I know, Todd, one thing about doing music for commercials and things like that, you have to be a one person show. Like, you know, you've usually the turnarounds too quick to get a full studio set up. It's like you've whatever you can do in your bedroom, you're doing it in your studio, you're doing it there. Because the thing is, over the three albums, one thing that struck me, which in a really beautiful way, don't take this incorrect, but there was no real progression in the way you approach everything you do, which I think is a really wonderful thing. But is that really intentional? I mean, is it for the two of you? Is there an element that if it got too big and too considered, it would lose its shine for the both of you? Like, if you turned around and went, let's hire a studio and get all these extra players in, and then instead of me, you know, Chrissy, instead of me doing six harmonies, let's get in a choir to do it. And, you know, there's budgetary constraints with that, but there's also the element of going, you know, that could be quite exciting to do. But do you think if it was to go down that kind of track, you would lose what it is you love about doing it?
I think if we went down that track, I feel like we would... That's a really, you know, I've never really thought about that before, to be really honest. But I think going down that track means that we're really growing. And that, again, I feel like we're growing already, right? Like we're yeah, putting ourselves out there more, we're playing. But I feel that would take a budget where we would need to go one step further into this process. Does that make sense?
No, it does. I know what you mean. I think the thing... from the outsider, I think where the two of you are is really, it really yeah, comes across incredibly comfortable. It's a really comfortable place. And it's not about not wanting to feel uncomfortable. It's more about it really works. And it seems like it's a lot of fun. And I just wonder if there'd be a risk of turning it into something that is not really what either of you intended in the first place.
Yeah,
I tend to think it's hard enough to get like two people pointing in the same direction. Like with her, it's probably the most I've collaborated with anything. We will say there is a my buddy Chris and a fellow left-hander. We've got Chrissy and Chris, and he does lots of our video stuff, and he'll help us out. And he just loves to be behind the scenes. And if we need a hand, he's done a lot of stuff with that. As we've grown, he did like the animation on Jellyfish Chicken and done lots of the mm-hmm, filming. So we do have the outside things, but I think it's so hard to get just two people pointed in one direction that all of a sudden, if you start adding more people, and even if the best of intentions is to be a backup musician, because, you know, with our name, we kind of stuck it as Todd and Tina. It's like, you know, we'll be like, you're the N. you're the apostrophe. You're the forward-facing apostrophe. But I think it's right now, as far as I'm concerned, maybe at some point it would be like, we were asked by Coney Fair to play a grandstand event this summer. And it's just like acoustic guitar, ukulele. We don't want to play a grandstand because
it's just not our vibe.
So big. And it would be fun to have a whole backing band, but then If our live shows turn into these random talking fests sometimes, and Chrissy gets off the hook and is like,
yeah.
I think you run the risk of, I'm not too worried about the songwriting. We seem to have a pretty good pattern for how that works. Mm-hmm. I bring in ideas, she edits some, I take them back, and we go back and forth until they're mm-hmm. something we both like. Live shows, it would always be, I'm always tempted to have a whole band, but then it just turns in, we're both adults with families, and it's hard enough to get our own schedules where they should be to play enough shows. And I couldn't imagine adding more to the mix would help anything in the long run.
Yeah, and I think now the question was probably not, I don't know if I gave it correctly, because I guess, you know, I feel like where the two of you are at and what you're creating is really brutally honest, and I don't think anything's, and the music's beautifully honest as a result.
Oh, thank you.
And I think, you know, but there's some people's music that kind of requires that enormity.
Yeah.
Some people, not many people can get away with doing it the way you do it. And I generally mean that. I don't think there's many people that can do it, but you do it, and you do it really well. And I think there would be something lost if you tried to.
There are certain tools, like even on
every. Trying to emulate something else, I don't know.
Yeah, every recording, like there's certain sounds, like there's a drum loop I've used on every record just for one song. And it's like, I chop it up, but it's like the same sound. And I always use the same splash cymbal. Like there's certain like little tools where you're like, okay, I don't want to turn this into like, because it's easy to go down that rabbit hole, especially now with digital audio. You're like, well, we can go do this. Endless. And I mean, I can play guitar well enough to get our point across. And Chrissy's got a great range on vocals, and I can hit my little niche to where it needs to be. And, you know, she covers where I fall out. So I think it's kind of our sound, and hopefully as we just progress, the songs get tighter and tighter. And, you know, we learn from the live shows, like, okay, like this type of song resonates more and this song doesn't. But then there's always the outliners where I'm like, let's just put this one on there. And
yeah, well, yeah, that's the truth of it. Because I guess the other thing is, if it already exists as a recording, there's going to be familiarity, isn't there, with the audience. And it's hard to walk on and do something that's never been played before. And do you know what I mean? Like, some of my most unsuspected songs are the ones that people want to hear. And I'm always like, really? And I don't think I would never have played it live.
Yeah.
So I don't even know that it's something that resonates until it ends up being recorded and, you know, grudgingly put on an album that turns out to be the favorite.
Isn't it funny how that works out sometimes? That's... The ones you expect that you think, oh, this is going to be the one. And then you're like, oh, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah. And then, I mean, but I think again, that's goes back into that last question, is that idea that when you start recognizing what works, do you become fixated in trying to emulate what works? Or do you just keep being true and go, oh, well, now that one's the one that hits, you know?
I think you just keep writing new stuff. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's kind of like once it's on the record, like as soon as Bombtastic got finished, I like was already writing new stuff, and she's just like, let's slow down a little bit. Like, you know, before December, I'm like, here, I've got a record. Let's check these things out. And she's like, let's put out the record before we worry about this. We still got to promote this record for a while. And I'm like, it's done. It's like, it's the people's now. it's whoever wants it. It belongs to the people. I washed my hands of this record. No, and I think that's just something where it's like the original spark of like, if all of a sudden I'm like, let's just do like an 80s synth pop record, then we'll go down that avenue and just stick to that, you know?
Yeah, I don't think...
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, I don't think though that, you know, as we make and create that we have to stay in this style or this, you know, we have to use these sounds and make these songs. I think that it, you know, if you were like, hey, I hear this 80s synth pop thing going on, I'm like, oh, okay, well, let's try that too, because I like 80s.
And I think inevitably,
I get the joke of the song. So like, let's go ahead and do it.
The keyboard sound doesn't matter. What's funny? No, the reason it's funny is because you would be positive blood.
That's right.
And you can't have that because he's allergic to it.
And I think though, I think the fact that the focus is so much on our lyrics that like, not that anything else is secondary, but that's what we focus on and making sure that it's communicated in whatever way we can.
Animal crackers on my mind, think about them all the time. Always wanting to do my head. It won't stop till I'm fat.
got one more question because we have hit the hour and I do need to have some responsibility over these podcasts. Chrissy, in that same article, the Rock Mummy magazine, you say, and that's when I realised I had to make it work. I had to make time for myself. I had to make my own interests a priority. So we've just spoken about Todd and Tina for the last hour, and the priority I hear, well, the thing I get from everything the two of you have been talking about is there is really just a lot of joy that is provided that enables you to not step outside of something that doesn't bring joy, but there's a real abandonment within the work that you do, be it visual, the music, everything. Do both of you, do you feel that abandonment, and do you feel like irrespective of different things, this is something you'll probably just keep on doing because it does bring so much joy to you and to the audience?
Yeah. And I think, you know, as both of us are parents and our kids are teenagers and they're in everything, and trying to just balance, find that work balance and family balance, and making sure that, at least for me, that I carve out time for Todd and Tina, because again, that's what brings me joy. My job brings me joy too, and my family, of course, brings me joy, but this is that thing for me. And I think it's important that for my own needs, right? I need to have that creative outlet. And so I just love that I have that opportunity and that I can make the time so that way we can create music and move forward. And I just love it so much. And so it becomes a priority, right? I mean, today it was, okay, I'm going to run one kid to dance, and then Todd, you're going to come over and we're going to meet with you. And then it's like, okay, and then we'll practice a little bit, but then you'll probably go pick up a kid and I'll go pick up another kid. And you know, there's just so much busyness to life that I think it's important that we stop and go, oh, okay, but we're going to do this because this is fun and this brings us joy, and we're going to create because we need to. Like, that's who we are, I think, as people, is we're artists and we need to be creative together. I don't know if I answered your question correctly.
No, that's perfect. It doesn't really have an answer. It's really just, what does it all mean to you? Because I think, and you said it there, we do get, I think also as artists, we get so overwhelmed by, it must be treated like a job, otherwise, you know, we're not taking it seriously. And there's that really great quote by Tom Jones, and someone said to him, what do you do for a job, or what do you do for work? And he said, I've never worked a day in my life. Yeah. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at is we need to remember that it is enormous fun, and I think that comes through what you make. What about you, Todd? Is that sort of a similar?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a dad, so I think my responsibility level is slightly lower because my wife picks up a lot of the slack, and luckily she's an angel. She'll just be like, fine. She knows I'm kind of a hyper guy where I just need to be doing stuff. Mm-hmm. And they don't want me around the house that much. But and I've always had
Todd and Tina brings them joy.
Exactly. They're like, wait, how many shows do you have today? 3. All right, we'll see you at dinner time. No, it's for me, it's always a priority. I'm always thinking about music. It's just kind of like whatever musical project I'm working on, it's always going through. I don't know if you're like that too, but I'm always like working on ideas in my head, or I'll go out for a run and like that's what I'm thinking about. And it's like you basically write the whole song in your head, and then it's just a matter of like you show up and get it out on the instrument.
But that's exactly,
or like I'll think of, yeah, like, and I've realized I've got to slow down on texting Chrissy ideas because she doesn't care about every single idea where I'm like, hey, what about this? What about this?
And I do get a little overloaded. And that's just, again, that's our different personalities, right? It's and like, the way we process and create.
And it's just like the ideas come to you and you're like, I'll just hold on to that for a while and rework it. Because you realize like people don't need to hear every
thought.
Yeah.
That's not true. That's not true, Todd. Don't you walk through your life thinking like that? Everyone,
yeah, exactly,
all the time. My wife understands it. like
everything. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm like, you don't want to hear that? Like, and she was like, no. What about?
I have this thing with my wife. I literally say to her, hey, you don't have to listen or respond, but I just need to say this. And she absolutely will just carry on doing whatever she's doing. Yeah. And I will just go into a half hour story that I expect zero reply to.
Yeah.
That's where we're at. And it works. It works. I've said it.
Figured out that you've just got to direct your energy. Like, I'm a big runner too. It's like, okay, if I'm going to go run, I'm going to go run. If I'm going to do music, I'll go do music, but I still make a priority because I love doing it. It's like, I'll still make an hour a night at least to go sit around and tinker with the guitar or whatever. Like, even if I'm not recording anything, but then usually it's, you know, mood follows action. So if you just go down and force yourself to do it, all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's an idea. And then the hardest part is like, usually I can't get the ideas around 8 or 9 o'clock at night, because then it's like, then you get jazzed and then you lay in bed thinking about like, well, you could do it like this. The bass could go like this. And, you know, then you wake up at 4 a.m. and you're thinking about a bass line that probably of a song that no one's ever going to hear, but, you know, or won't even get released. They won't even make it to that process. But, you know, you just, I've always just been excited about music. It's kind of like, it's always been the priority since like 15, 14 years old, probably since Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood.
Yeah.
Like, solid record. And I mean,
the kaboom moment.
Yeah, that was the, exactly. No, I just even remember being young and it's like, I loved Motley Crue's Dr. Feelgood, but then Poison put out Flesh and Blood. And I couldn't decide which record to listen to on the way to the cabin because I thought Vince and Nikki would be mad at, you know, if I swapped them out. Yeah. I'm sure you've had these heated debates, and then Skid Row enters the picture and you're like, wait. Yeah. Yeah. I can't.
And then while you're arguing over that, something else comes out that then you just go, well, you two can just go to the side now because I'm going to listen to this one forever.
Yeah, exactly. No, and it's always just been a huge priority. And I mean, I still read about music probably for 1 to 2 hours every day. And it's like, if I get into somebody, I've recently been into Todd Rundgren, and it's not like one book. It's like every book out there, you pick up all his records, and I've read every interview like he's done. And you're just like, okay, I know. You know, I become the Wikipedia page of that artist, or magnetic fields. It's the same type of thing. And I love music. That's just why I do it.
So to sort of be a bit more specific, I have a question, like with that kind of very, let's just call what it is, a very busy, active brain, do you find Todd and Tina allows it to kind of be less analytical and more just let it, just a bit like emptying a jug, just let it out, you know?
Not really, because then it's like, as soon as I write one song, I'm like, I like that one. And then all of a sudden you just wait and like another song just comes in. It's like an assembly line where it's like we even just put out the record. And then as soon as that was mastered and off at production and all that, then all of a sudden I'm like, I go downstairs. I'm like, okay, now I've got time to write some new songs, but like, I still have that's it, because it's like, I'm like, okay, I can't start working on new stuff until this is done and out, because otherwise you don't want to forget about the other ones, right? You're still proud of those, but you need to get those things out because there's still a project. Yep. And again, it comes back to, if you had a bigger crew, like, you know, like we were talking about, like Taylor Swift, she's able to put out all this music, but like, we're doing everything from mixing to mastering to every bit of production, every vocal breath. We're like, okay, edit that out and do this. Mm. Whereas if you had a crew, you'd probably lose a lot of the personality. Actually, I was telling, in one of my stories, I was telling Chris yesterday about how Nine Inch Nails started getting really bad once Trent no longer did all the production. And she doesn't even like Nine Inch Nails, but like, she humored me and listened to the story. I'm like, no, it was really good on Downward Spiral. And then I read an article about the making of The Fragile, and he would just do takes and he'd give it to his assistant, and it's not a good record. As much as I know the Nine Inch Nails fans listening to this podcast are going to be really angry at me for saying that, but I will double down on the Downward Spiral and Broken are far superior. Actually,
weirdly, really strangely, there will be a very direct connection with this podcast and Nine Inch Nails, because Susie Tolman, who was one of the guests on this podcast, was a music producer and worked with Nine Inch Nails, Trent Reznor, and Ron Sexsmith and all that. So she actually literally learned her production skills from Trent Reznor.
So look out.
You tell her Todd Mellencamp knows Andy Kubicheski, who played drums on the song The Downward Spiral. And he never got a platinum record from it, even though he shows up and plays drums on that song specifically.
I've got the email from him. Yeah, I can actually. I'll do an email introduction, and you can just let her know that directly. How about that?
And step away.
Yeah, I feel like I'm not going to quite get the passion across on that one.
No. Well, I'll go off on tangents. Said, I'll be like,
"Hi, Susie." Todd said something about a drummer in the band that other what come in
credit. Name.
But anyway, something about that they weren't great after that.
No, he was still great, but he's playing drums for the at the time, and he met Trent at the Big Day Out festival while they were recording "Downward Spiral," and he's credited in the credits, but he never got the platinum record.
Yeah. That's the thickle business.
I'm going to get this email from Andy Kubicheski in my email. He's like, shut up. Don't ever talk to me again.
I think this might be the first time I've ever said on a podcast for creators of children's music, but I think talking about Nine Inch Nails and the appropriate credits going to guest drummers is a good place to wrap it up.
I think so. Get the hook.
This would never happen, but I think this is probably the ideal time to wrap this one up. Todd and Chrissy, I really appreciate your time today, and I really do mean everything I say. I think what I really love about what you do is, and I will use the word again, there's the chaos. And as I said at the start, it's not chaotic, but the chaos, the ability to find the chaos around you and control it and turn it into something that is fun and deliberate is, I think, it's a real craft and it's a real skill. And I want to thank you very much for the music that you do create. And thank you for taking your time on talking to me, Benny, asking people questions today.
Thanks so much for having us. It's been a pleasure.
If you'd like to know more about Todd and Tina, then you can find them on Instagram at Todd and Tina Music, which will give you all the info you need. That's Todd, T-O-D-D, and Tina Music. And, of course, for more Benny Time goodness, head along to bennytime.com. Thanks for listening to me, Benny, asking Todd and Tina questions.